Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's BudPod 139.
Papa 139. I don't think I have anything for 139.
What? 139, and we're feeling fine.
I'm trying to see if I can rhyme all the syllables. Honey pine. 139. Honey pine.
Oh,
honey
I
pine
see.
Is an endangered tree I just made up.
Oh.
Yeah.
It could be a horrible sort of nickname. Honey pine.
yeah, people think you're about to say honey pie. oh, honey pine!
Yeah.
And you go, ugh, right at the end.
Everyone sort of goes, wait, what?
Oh, honey pine.
Excuse me, honey pine.
Everything's normal until
nuh.
And people go, do you say honey pie or honey pine?
And then he's so confident, people start going, is it honey pine? Because I know you can't get a honey pie.
Yeah, oh gosh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
what a honey pie would be.
Now I'm doubting it. So what is that, some crust filled with honey? That's no pie. That's gloop.
That's disgusting. That's crust and gloop.
That's crust and gloop, which which were two of the greatest comedians of the 1930s.
Wonderful, hilarious men, but not a dessert.
No. Tall, thin, serious crust and big, fat, silly, round gloop.
Crust and gloop. They would be that way around. Crust is definitely the straight man.
Yeah. Oh, God, with a name like Crust, I mean, that's Dickensian, really.
Yeah. And every time gloop messes up, he goes, gloop! Sorry, crust.
Yeah, and who could forget their iconic black and white slapstick films of Crust and Gloop? Roller Rink Birthday.
The Roller Rink Birthday. Yeah, that was a great one.
Day Out at the Sawmill.
Mm-hmm. Washing a very high window for some reason, having never operated a window cleaning company before.
Yes. And slipping on a banana peel that wasn't composted in time to be of use in the war effort. That was a later one.
You know what I think about sometimes is like how lucky you and I are that the microphone was invented, because without it, to be a comedian, you had to put your life at risk every time. You had to like nearly fall off an actual clock tower, or have a house fall on you, or get hit on the head like 15 times by a real ladder.
Yeah.
Before the invention of plastic, so it was like it would be a heavy like wood ladder.
Yeah, they were like, this is as light as we can make this prop.
I mean, like, Charlie Chaplin was like an acrobat. He was like an athlete, basically.
Do you think people got annoyed at how much he earned? And they said, nurses should be paid chaplain's wages. Like young footballers. It's true, though. And or like at best, Phil, we would be in music halls just absolutely bellowing.
Yeah, really screaming.
We'd have to have like small stages, and we'd have to project and kind of puff our chests up like cartoons from that era. Big puffy chests. And to be fair, this is genuinely quite a good, something I thought of. It's genuinely makes quite a difference. The range of humor you can use when you can't, like it's so limited if you can't whisper or speak quietly or vary your tone.
Yes, that's right. It all has to be like, well, what did you say? I said he can put his cigar where his bum don't shine.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And everyone's like, oh, and you got to do another joke in exactly that energy.
Yeah, just constantly like any jokes or reported speech have to be sort of the voice of a large bank manager.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. You don't think about that, you know, that without the microphone, stand up wouldn't exist. It would be, you wouldn't be able to do little quiet little bits, little whispering bits.
Yeah, yeah.
Creepy little whispering jokes.
Do you think you could do an entirely whispered show? Did our friend and colleague and fine comedian Jack Barry do that?
A whisper show?
I swear I remember him doing some sort of ACMS. That's a night. ASMR thing.
You're right, he did. He did do an ASMR show. You're right. But I think, like online, wasn't it?
Yeah. He filmed himself doing a sort of whispered... Yeah, search Jack Barry ASMR if you want to figure out what I'm talking about, because I only half remember it myself. It was before this ghastly wall.
I think it was during the ghastly wall, wasn't it? Or wasn't it a lockdown project?
I swear I remember seeing him do some of it live. And like a whip.
A work in progress.
A work in progress. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
He wasn't pressuring MPs to vote a particular way.
No, well, not directly or with any huge success. So we'd have legalized weed by now.
Yeah.
That was his other big show with his weed suit, which is an amazing thing that I still kind of can't believe you can buy. It's a suit just covered in cannabis leaf print.
Yeah, I guess imagery of drugs is not illegal.
No. No, although I'm sure...
Well, it should be.
If you got a suit covered... do you think you could get a tailored suit just covered in the ISIS flag? Someone would come to your house, surely.
Well, there's a podcast called Red Scare, and they made... it's two gals, and they made a t-shirt to sell that is Red Scare, but accompanied by an ISIS flag, but it's like over a pink background. And they got a lot of like... really Daily Mail style. These disgusting, but I don't think it's illegal. I think like some platforms might not want you to sell it or would not agree to sell it, and some would. Yeah.
So wait, it's the same as the ISIS flag, but it's pink instead of black.
Yeah, pink, and maybe it says like Red Scare in a font that looks like Arabic, but it's actually
okay.
You know what I mean?
I get you. I see. Very, very punk, if I may say.
Very punk. Very punk.
Yeah. Well, we're not punk here, Phil. We're the only anti-murder podcast, and proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, that is as far as we're willing to push the boat, really, being openly anti-murder. And we don't care about the hate mail that we get. And we get a lot. We get the number of murderers who write in.
Yeah.
Like when you hear Pierre reading out correspondence, you from time to time you hear like a pause in his speech as he's looking. He's just having to skip through all the hate mail from prisons.
Yeah, it's true. I'm scrolling through because I can see. I just look at the email addresses and I can see, you know, at San Quentin, at Broadmoor. It's just murderer, murderer, murderer. It's just the
prisoners
murderer
can't. Do prisoners get an email addresses with prison.co.uk?
Are they allowed? I guess it would just be dangerous. I guess they're the only people these days who still get letters.
Right. Surely they're allowed computers. I mean, like, no, surely there is like an internet cafe bit.
I guess
there must be.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. But then I don't know. I know they're allowed other stuff, but maybe they're too worried that they could... Because they're not allowed mobiles, are they?
Hmm. Probably they might arrange Denmark. Yeah. Probably in Scandinavia.
Or in Norway, they probably just get the latest iPhone for free, along with some crack.
Probably get a colour iPhone. Full colour iPhone.
Yeah, it's so funny when you see like Daily Mail stuff where they're like, oh, prisoners are treated too nicely because they get colour TVs, and it's like, wow, what? find me a black and white TV. It'd be more expensive. or like, whenever they always go on about like, oh, people on benefits have flat screen TVs, as if that's not the only type of TV available now.
Yeah. Yeah.
For like
I'm
15 years.
You can, yeah. And you can get like, it's well, you can get a TV now that in 2003 would have cost you £15,000.
Yeah.
And now it's like £400 or something. Like it's,
yeah.
Every time I look up TVs, I'm like, what? I'll buy five.
They're always
cheaper than you think they're going to be. This is one of the few things in life that is cheaper than you think is going to be.
Big fancy TV.
Big fancy TV.
I would say most TVs you can buy now have a better resolution than the projector in the movie theater I was in last night, Phil.
Ooh. Why were you in there? Were you stealing popcorn?
I just love the noise the seats make when they flip up. I was just doing that.
That is good. Flicker the fluff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What? I'm going to guess what you saw. You went to see... Fahrenheit 9/11.
It was time for some truth, Phil. Of everything I thought you were going to say, I could never have guessed you were going to say Michael Moore's seminal Fahrenheit 9/11.
That's just come out, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Do you know? Do you know what's really funny about Michael Moore is that he was kind of like apoplectic. And completely like indignant with shock and fury at George W. Bush. So presumably when Donald Trump was elected, his head just burst like a big balloon and he had to sit down for 4 years.
What's interesting, isn't it, Michael Moore, like when Michael Moore came out, we were like, whoa, this guy hates the George W. Bush and he's willing to say it.
Yeah.
And now, because of social media and Twitter and stuff, like Michael Moore is like... It's like Michael Moore is like vanilla ice cream and we're all eating like Thai sweet chili sorbet with a base of Szechuan peppers and spikes. And we're just like, we can't even taste Michael Moore anymore.
No, God no. Yeah, you're right. Like at the time, everyone was just like, this guy was disrespectful to a senator. I mean, what? And he's kind of fat and loud. And he's got a kind of unconventional hat.
He made a whole movie about how gun laws in America are too lax. He made a whole movie. He thinks America's being run badly. And we were like, whoa, who is this guy? And now it's like... All right, company man Michael Moore.
Yeah. He did a whole movie about that freak high school massacre.
Mm.
You'd have to do a movie once every 3 days now, wouldn't you, in America? Isn't that the stat?
I mean...
There's a mass shooting like every week or something, so if you were going to be Michael Moore now, it would have to be like a kind of constantly rolling Netflix series.
Oh, series those we'd be at like we'd be the Good Housewives of Orange County at this point, like season 15 or something of Michael Moore's bowling for Columbine still bowling. I guess that's what it would be called, bowling for Columbine more pins strike to I don't know.
Yeah, or they do all the extra interview series where it's like bowling for Columbine after bowling beers or something, where they all sit around and talk about the niceties of the latest school shooting. But I will say, Phil, I went to go see Dune.
Dune, that was going to be my serious guess. Dune. Yeah. I want to watch Dune. People love the worms. People keep saying the worms in Dune are great.
The worms are cool. It's visually stunning, which is annoying because, like, have you ever... I just went to a place that was showing Dune. I didn't plan it as much as I should have, and that's my fault. But this projector was not amazing. It wasn't an amazing screen. It was still cool, but then do you know how sometimes before movies now they play a whole sequence of cool ultra HD images to illustrate how good their stuff is?
Oh yeah.
And at the View Cinema, it does a whole thing about, like, this is not a cinema. It's a racetrack, an opera house. And it's like, and a car goes past. And then it's like an opera singer going, and then it's like zooming in on his beard. Whoa. And musical notes turn into like 3D balls that bounce on a speaker and all that shit.
They might as well just play a video of the CEO of View going, stop watching movies at home.
Yeah. But it was such a mistake in this case because it was just like, I remembered how much better that same video is at different screens. So I was like, I could kind of see grain on this.
Oh, right. So they've shot themselves in the foot now. You have like a working anthology. You have like a collection of this, of these tests across various screens. So now you know when one is not up to scratch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think I still thought that visually Dune was like astonishing. I do recommend seeing it. I knew I was getting screwed out of some of the cool bits.
Of course, it must have been hard. It's very desert based from what I am aware of, Dune. And it must have been hard differentiating between sand and just sort of pixels.
yeah, it's not set in the desert at all. It's set in a skate park. It's supposed to be solid concrete, but it just looked like sand. And it's very deserty, and there is quite a bit of sort of as I said with I think I discussed the did I discuss on Bud Pod seeing the Prince of Egypt in the West End?
Oh no, I don't even mention that. I didn't even want to see the Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, and but there's a lot of that kind of like music where you're lost in a desert and it's going, like just sort of general sort of
how's
desert
that?
Noise, you know.
How was the Prince of Egypt on the West End?
That was good. I saw that a little while, a month or two ago.
I should see more theatre. I should go and see something like that.
I will.
I remember seeing the DreamWorks animation
yeah.
of that film a while back, and it was like, I just remember it being like very pop, like the songs were like properly like, whoa, yeah, we're in Egypt, he's the Pharaoh. Like it's like really R&B, like they didn't, usually in those sort of animated musicals, they sing the songs sort of norm, like the normal sort of fun musical Disney style songs. And then right at the end in the credits, they have Christina Aguilera doing like a poppy version.
Yeah. You know?
Of like the circle of life, but in the actual movie, it's just the circle of life. Woohoo, yeah, because I'm the actor singing it. Woohoo, have a good time. But in The Prince of Egypt, it was like all straight away.
Yeah.
Oh, Egypt is a big old country, and I'm gonna run it real good. Yeah, and it's just the whole way through, and I found it really took me out of it. It's like, this is too modern feeling. I don't believe that I'm in Egypt. Also, like, the characters, I don't think I've ever seen, like, Egyptian characters whitewashed in an animation. Yeah, you know, it's like, it's bad enough when it's in real life and they've cast, what's his fucking name? Batman. Batman's name?
Christian Bale?
Christian Bale. They've cast Christian Bale as an Egyptian pharaoh. And you're like, oh, come on, dude. Don't get an Egyptian guy. And, you know, the director's like, well, we needed a big name. With an animation, it's like, you could have drawn them any color. And you still drew them like a bit white.
They kind of, I'm looking up the animated movie now, and they sort of look Spanish.
Right. Let me have a look. Prince of Egypt.
I suppose we also like, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because what is the ethnicity of like the ancient Egyptians?
Oh, no. I mea culpa, put my hands up. They are tan. I think what I'm thinking about is I've confused my memory of these faces with the people in El Dorado City of Gold, which I think was also a DreamWorks animation, in which I guess of what should have been sort of Spanish conquistador types looked particularly blonde.
There's one of the, you mean one of the main characters? Because that's one I've actually seen.
The El Dorado City of Gold.
The animated movie.
Yeah. The Rote El Dorado. Here we go. Yes, there's a very... Oh, no, but... Yeah. Maybe I've whitewashed my own memory. There's one main character in it who looks very blonde.
Yeah, but that's... He's from Europe.
Yeah, but he looks like he's... Icelandic.
Yeah, but there are blonde Spanish people.
Okay, Pierre. Apologist. All right, white supremacy apologist Pierre Novelli.
I like how you said that, like, I was suggesting that there could be planets with, like, kind of Mercury seas, like a completely unprovable... Okay, maybe. It could be.
When I was a kid, for, like, three years, I thought all blonde people came from Australia.
What?
And... I thought only Australia could make blonde people. And I remember so clearly watching No Doubt and seeing Gwen Stefani in a No Doubt video, noticing that she was blonde and just clear as anything in my head going, oh, she's Australian. I didn't realize No Doubt was an Australian band.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
for
like,
ages, I thought all blonde people came from Australia.
That's like the belief of a sort of ancient spice merchant.
Yes.
The logic of one. Obviously, there would have been no blonde people in ancient Australia, but you know what I mean, right? Like, well, of course, frogs come from the sky.
But anyway, suffice to say, I take back my my attempt at cancellation of the Prince of Egypt. They do look Middle Eastern now that I've Googled them.
Certainly Middle Eastern enough. That doesn't mean the cast is, because it could be full of white people going, whoa, 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 wobbling their throats.
Oh, for
sing.
Certain.
Yeah.
For certain. But that's, you know, I think that's one you're going to have to accept.
Yes. And
1998.
Yeah, old. Phil, you'll be glad to hear, though, the West End version. The songs are just as wobbly, and there are even more songs, and they're just as wobbly, too.
I don't like wobbly songs.
I will say this, at the start of... There's a bit at the start of The Prince of Egypt where there's a bunch of, like, the kind of Greek chorus bit of the cast... kind of pretending to be the sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, okay.
Like they're dressed in all scrubbly clothes and kind of, ooh, we're the desert wind or whatever. And I do remember thinking at that moment, the effects better be better than this. This better go beyond
right.
The groups of people pretending to be stuff.
And did it, or was that it?
It did, yeah, it did. It did.
Oh, okay.
But I did have a moment of thinking, I hope this isn't the peak of the effects. But some of the effects are amazing. They've got some amazing stuff, yeah. But like Dune, a bit where they're kind of lost in the desert and a voice kind of goes, ah, just sort of wailing.
Oh,
yeah, and I always want to know if it's actually like a word that they're saying, or if it's a language, or if
yeah.
it's just a general lament.
I've always wondered that. Like in Gladiator, when she goes, like, is that just like nonsense poetry, or is
yeah.
she going, he's a gladiator stabbing some guys, he's the best fighter, but he's gonna die, he's a gladiator, Russell Crowe is nice.
Yeah, well, that's...
Or is it just noise?
Or is it just like the equivalent of a song from the 20th century, someone going, skibbidi-boo-bap-di-bap-boo, yet-a-dee-yah. Yeah, is it someone going, lost in the desert, like just yelling, oh no, just yelling, oh no, the word desert.
we'll have to fly to Egypt and just like sing it in the street and see what response we get. Just walking around Cairo. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And people going, there are children here.
Or what? Or are people suddenly going, oh, God, sorry, I thought I was lost in the desert for a second, eh? And they go, we got it right. Yeah, maybe it's just the word thirsty really elongated. Could be. But yeah, I recommend Dune, but I recommend getting it, spending the time and money and research on a big old screen, IMAX, whatever, something like that.
If there's sand in it, Pierre wants you to see it.
It's I give it 9 sands out of 10.
Great, that's great.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
9 grains of sand out of 10.
Okay. Had you read the books, the Dune books?
No, I literally remember, in a similar way to you, have this sense memory of thinking that someone was Australian. That these memories that stick with you, I distinctly remember when I stopped being able to read very in depth fantasy, or high sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
I remember picking up a book that, because I was super into it, I read loads of it growing up, I was absolutely a super fan, and I picked up a book that should have ticked all the boxes, and I looked, and it was one of those sci-fi or fantasy books where the first 3 pages are just like maps of the worlds discussed, and like glossary of the peoples of this land. And it was all, as it has to be, made up names, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought, I can't be bothered. And it like worried me at the time. I was like, am I like stupider now that I can't make myself remember this stuff? But I just remember thinking, I don't know all the countries in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I mean, that's my contention with fantasy and learning about fantasy lands. It's like, I don't know all the countries in Europe. I can't remember a couple. I feel like I should learn those first before I learn Middle Earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you sort of think, I don't necessarily know much about a country where I probably... There's like a daily risk I could meet someone from there. Never mind the fucking elf people. And it can get really detailed because if you really go in for like this like 2-inch thick fantasy books, it's like... You have to remember it to lend weight and detail in the plot. Like, Lord of the Rings does it sometimes, but some of them are much worse offenders, where they'll be like, well, this shall be as bloody as the Siege of Gragnoth. And you're like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. I don't have enough contextual knowledge to understand what this character is saying. Like,
yeah,
having to construct a whole new world of taboos from nothing.
And social mores.
Yeah, all of that. And you just go, well, I have to learn how to be a whole human again, kind of.
Also, there's a terrible danger that reading too much sci-fi will make you one of those guys who refers to women as females. Which is a fate worse than death. You don't want to become... You don't have read about so many different humanoid species that you refer to women in the real world as females.
Females. There's a lot of that around now.
Is there?
Well, like online. I mean, it's not like there's a big sign in the road saying it.
No, I mean, yeah, but I mean... Exactly. But
I don't remember it happening so much. And I'm talking about internet nerds. I don't remember it happening so much. Like, I think it would have seemed weirder, even weirder, like 15 years ago. Whereas now it's all sort of like females are like this and this female and that. It's such a weird descriptor to use. It makes you sound like a fucking alien. It's so odd.
Yeah, like a zoologist.
Yeah, it's so disconcerting.
I could never get into those thick books. I think mainly because I was very lazy and not a good reader. And unless it was Dan Brown, like, I wasn't interested.
Mm-hmm.
When I've read Dan Brown, I was like, at last, an author who cuts off the fat. You know, it just gets me to the story, baby.
Yeah, just the man is in the building. Tell me more. What would you do? It would be quite disconcerting, wouldn't it, if we knew a lady who was like, oh, I see there are quite a few males in the room.
Yeah, I've never ever heard a woman refer to men as males.
Males. That would be weird. That would make me feel like she was planning some sort of, like an experiment or...
Yeah.
Males. Yeah, science language shouldn't creep into daily language because you make yourself sound like you have a lair.
I remember watching like a trailer for, I think it was, a Louis Theroux documentary where he was like, he was going deep diving into the porn industry and he's like shadowing this pornographer who's got this camera. He's holding his camera and he's pointing it at like a guy fucking a lady and he's going real close onto the dick going into the vag. And Louis Theroux is like, so what are you're making a movie? And he's like, and pornographer's like, yes, I'm making a movie. And you're really getting close in there on that sort of vagina, aren't you? And pornographer's like, yes. Well, that's what the viewers want. And Louis Theroux is like, why do you think a movie like this would appeal to people? And the pornographer goes, for masturbatory purposes, I'm afraid. And I was so struck by that. Firstly, by the use of masturbatory purposes. I don't even know masturbatory is a word. For masturbatory purposes, I'm afraid. And then secondly, I was like, why are you afraid? Aren't you, when you were aware from day one, when you started this job, that was the sole purpose of pornography?
It's because it's like, he's so numb to it, right?
Mm.
That he's reached a higher plane where it's it's not even about jacking off anymore.
Right.
He's like, he's like an aristocrat hundreds of years ago where he's saying like, people come to the theatre, yes, but it's to drink, I'm afraid. And to throw things.
Maybe he was accusing himself as a filmmaker of being ostentatious and self-obsessed. You know, like, I'm being a bit masturbatory about this. Well, this is a bit onanistic of me.
You would never trust
the
guy. The
shot.
You would never trust the guy who is A, a pornographer, and B, introduced himself by saying, I make onanistic media for masturbatory purposes. You'd be like, oh, you're like the devil in a short story. Why would you say it like that if you weren't just the devil? In a moralistic short story. Maybe I'm wrong, Phil, and maybe it's not that he was so jaded, it's that he's absolutely raw to the scandal of it all, and he's just there filming this, you know, visceral close-up and just going, he's still ashamed, even after all these years, that it still has this kind of naughtiness to him. Maybe that's why he loves what he does, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that's the way to do it, if you're making porn, like, to still find it hot after all those years. I mean, that's the dream, I guess.
Yeah, do it for the love.
It sounds difficult.
Don't. If you do something you love for a job, you never work a day in your life, etc. Which, as comedians, we can both testify, is a lie.
It is a lie. There are still emails. Even your passion requires like 10,000 emails a day to live your dream. Is mainly emails.
You could get a job as a fucking ice cream tester, and you'd still have to pass a yearly health insurance physical to make sure you don't have diabetes yet.
Yep, you still have to fill in a Google Doodle with all the other ice cream tasters about who can taste ice cream on what day.
Nut allergy liability insurance, sure.
Oh, and the effect of the COVID pandemic on the ice cream tasting industry? Forget about it.
Forget
all those tongues.
It. And you
have to sanitize the ice cream before you put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Horrible.
You think professional ice cream tasters are going to get a sympathetic hearing in the press? Try the other one.
Try the other one. What does that phrase mean? Pull the other one. Pull the other one. Like pull my leg? Are you implying that you're someone's pulling your leg?
Yeah, you're pulling my leg. And also the full phrase I've heard is pull the other one. It's got bells on.
Right. That's too involved. Pull the other one. It's got bells on.
Is that Morris dancing as a reference?
Did Morris dancers come up with that phrase? The only meme to bleed out into wider society from Morris dancing.
I wonder, do you think that the Morris dancing can't be where Shake a Stick Out comes from, can it?
Pierre, all our proverbs are from Morris dancing. I say as I slowly put a hand on your shoulder.
Yeah, and as you put the hand, as you lift your hand to put it on my shoulder, I notice that there's a handkerchief poking out of your cuff, and I realize they've gotten to you.
And you just hear a like ding 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 ding. Oh no, ding 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 ding.
If you want to imagine the future, Phil, imagine a human face being Morris danced on forever. Anyone listening outside the UK, or even really outside England, do look up Morris dancing and enjoy.
Yeah, it is essentially, it looks like a rain dance, but by middle-aged white guys in full white, sort of cricket whites, essentially. But with bells around their knees, like they're Bert and Mary Poppins, and cymbals on their elbows.
Yeah. I suppose it would retain some of its kind of Wicker Man creepiness if you saw Morris dancing being done like exclusively by like very sort of like farm hands, you know, like very athletic young men.
Right, yeah.
Then it would look like what it is, which is some kind of creepy spring fertility witchcraft stuff. It would look like something from Midsommar if it was being done by young people.
Yes, exactly. If it was done by the physically fit, it'd be very intimidating.
Yeah, yeah.
But fortunately, it isn't.
No, very rarely. But it still retains a bit of its spooky charm. Is that a sign of a society that's moved far from its traditions, Phil, where all the traditional stuff is just done by middle-aged enthusiasts and sort of oddball teens?
Yeah, I mean, even back in the day, I feel like it would have been the elders who they're the only ones old enough to know our ancient ways. And I reckon, like, back in the day, you know, you weren't considered ready for an actual Morris performance until you were like 48, even though you've been studying it for 30 years, you still had to mainly clean the older men's bells until you earned the right to don them in public, like a samurai or a high-end sushi chef.
Yeah, okay, I see. Yes, I see what you're saying.
Like, Jiro Dreams of Morris Dancing. I don't know if you ever saw that documentary.
Just from the second he wakes up, the bells, the sticks, he's into it. He's there. God. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe you're right. And there's like big arguments between sort of very, very long grey bearded men in cloaks. And he's not ready. Yeah, they all look like Merlin.
If Morris Dancing like just disappeared, would you feel sad? If one day like the news went, the final Morris Dancer has died, and there's no record of how to do it. Thus spells the end of the Morris dancing tradition. Would you be like, oh no?
I think I would be.
Yeah.
I think I would be. Because.
Yeah, I think I would, because, you know, at least was keeping them off the streets.
I always think it's a bit sad whenever that happens, like. Because I'm never sure, if you lose something like that, I'm never certain if it's being replaced by anything.
Right, yeah.
So if they were like, oh, yeah, Morris dancing's gone, but there's this other culturally uniting, I mean, not that Morris dancing is now culturally uniting, but, you know, there's this other, like, interesting, quirky local tradition that loads of people are doing, and it's new, but it's been going on for maybe 10 years. It's not, it's always just like, it's always replaced by kind of nothing, and that's what worries me.
They'll just be replaced by, like, crypto. Just more people will be doing cryptocurrency.
Yeah, it's replaced by cyberbullying. That's the new Morris dancing. In 400 years, people will ceremoniously post rude things on each other's walls with kind of antique kit.
Like old typewriters. Like they've got it a bit wrong.
Yeah. They haven't understood it, and they're actually putting it on each other's walls. They go through the village saying "you're fat" or whatever on each other's actual walls. Yeah, it's become murky with time. No one can quite remember how it began. It's a rite of passage in the old days. Yeah, that fits. Yeah.
I wish I was engaged in some sort of cultural tradition. I don't think I have anything really that sort of ties me back across the generations.
You've got more than one language.
Languages are good ones, sure. Yeah, language and I guess food and knowing, you know, being able to cook sort of some Malaysian food and some Chinese food and all that.
You got yourself Chinese New Year?
But I don't have any parade to take part in. I'm always very jealous of, like, especially Americans in all these small towns. They all have, like, their own parade. And, like, Dad has played Jiminy Crockett for every year since 97 or whatever. And I just don't have anything like that. There's nothing.
They do
like,
have a lot of parades.
They do have a lot of parades.
I suppose it's because, like, We're too busy and we're too urban, like we're too deep into London to do like Penny for the Guy or something, you know?
Yeah.
Although people still do that, which is quite good.
What is the Penny for the Guy thing? Like people come around and collect pennies?
No, I think you can go door to door, but I think it's more traditional to sort of have one like in the high street or by the side of the road or near a shop or something. And it's like you make you make an effigy of Guy Fawkes that will later be burned.
Yes, of course.
And people give a penny for the guy, I guess, which is to kind of compensate you for your efforts. I don't know. It just became a thing that kids did.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't go to charity. It doesn't go to like the V for Vendetta Memorial Society.
It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't go to the Keep Parliament's Cellar Free of Gunpowder.
Plot,
initiative.
Plot. Keep England plot free.
plot free since 1683, baby.
We dream of a Britain where there are no plots. A plot free. We can beat plots. And all these sort of mawkish ads of people looking seriously into the camera going, plots, we're coming for you.
Oh, God.
We're going to get you, plots. Time's up, plots.
Or, just people very seriously sort of saying, how there's been an increase in plots year on year in the United Kingdom. Sort of newsreader voice.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, there probably is an increase in plots all the time.
There are a lot of plots. There are a lot of plots.
Like the man, well, we never even discussed it, the man who blew himself up in the car park, Phil.
Oh, fuck, in Liverpool, yeah. Have you seen the video?
Yeah, it's mad. It's like the car explodes so soon after rolling in.
Yeah, so it rolls around and basically stops, like, perfectly stops in front of the entrance to... It's a women's hospital, a maternity hospital, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And just goes... BAM! Like that. But we've spoken about this before. When you see an explosion in real life, it's always dustier than you expect it to be. Because
yes.
In movies, explosions are like fireballs. But in real life, it's always like, poof!
Yes, like it's a smoke always bomb. Just dust.
And then incredibly, the taxi driver just gets out after the explosion. Because at first, from all the reports said, or like the ones that gained most traction was, the taxi driver sort of noticed the guy had a bomb on him. He got out of the car, locked the doors, ran away, and then it exploded. Which always sounded odd to me. I was like, how did he manage to do that?
Yeah, it made it sound like a kind of leap into the air. Like action film thing.
Yeah, but it blows up. The guy blows up while the taxi driver's inside.
Yeah, and it's something to do.
And he comes out, and he's okay. I'm like, how strong is that sort of plastic COVID shield between him and the back seat?
Well, see, I think it was a black cab.
Ah,
traditional vehicles, Phil. None of this Uber.
Yeah, gosh, it's probably how he was saved.
Well, they think something went wrong with the explosive because it was this, like the car just burnt for ages and until it burnt out completely. So, I don't know.
Mm.
And they still, like the guy who converted to Christianity, but then he didn't. And he said he was Syrian, but he was Iraqi, but his mom was Syrian. It's just the most confusing thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. But that, yeah, I mean, that's an example of one of those things where I always think, like, in the newspaper, they always go, well, why didn't MI5 know about this? And it's like, why didn't MI5 know about a guy who lived alone in a flat and didn't talk to anyone, very gradually using fake identities to buy parts to things? Like, how much power do you want MI5 to have? Because they could know about that, but they'd have to know about everything you're doing, too.
That's right. And also, like, you probably aren't aware of the many plots foiled by MI5 every day that you just never find out about.
I'm thinking more about plots now, Phil, than I have in a long time. And there's got to be so many plots.
There are many plots. There's so many plots. Everyone's a plotting these days. Everyone be a plotting. Can everyone just calm down on the plots? Can everyone stop plotting for a bit, please? So
bitches
I can catch
be,
up.
Bitches be plotting.
Bitches be plotting. Fellas be plotting too. Everyone's plotting.
I love the idea of like a kind of exasperated Def Jam comedian, but it's just about the war on terror. Just Bernie Mac really throwing his hands in the air in exasperation at Al-Qaeda.
I wish they'd call counterterrorism counterplotting.
See, yeah.
It'd be so much more fun.
What's your area of expertise? Plots, mainly plots.
Oh, you like a gardener? No.
No. Plots, schemes, masterminds, you know.
But that was on Remembrance Sunday, wasn't it, the guy that the failed car explosion?
Yes. Yes, he blew himself up a minute before 11 o'clock, so that seems like relevant, but they're not sure. It's
also a great ad for the taxi driver's skills. Like, spot on 11 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that you don't get that with Uber. You need someone with the knowledge.
That's true. I was talking to some Americans the other day, and they'd never heard of the knowledge. So for any Americans listening, if you want to become a black cab driver for decades and decades, maybe even more, longer than that, I don't know, over 100 years, something, you basically just have to do an exam, like it's basically a degree. It takes 3 years, 4 years, and you have to memorize every road in London.
Mm-hmm. But at the end of that, you get to enjoy a long, fulfilling career of protesting Uber.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And also, as a bonus, you get an enlarged hippocampus, I think.
Yes, big old hippo.
They did a study where they x-rayed taxi drivers' brains after they'd done the knowledge, and the area of their brain that deals with memories is actually, you can see in an x-ray or something, that you can see the difference. Amazing.
Yeah. Baby got hippo.
Yeah.
I like big hippocampuses on a black cab guy. You Uber drivers can't deny that when an Ian walks in with a pink sweaty face and uncomfortable opinions about immigration in your face, you get stung.
I think it's going to catch on.
Thank you, thank you.
That could be
I'm the new Weird Al.
Yes, yeah, you're the new Weird Al with God, imagine trying to be the new Weird Al. In this,
I mean,
day
I guess everyone's
age.
Doing it.
Yeah,
it's funny.
It's
I don't know how Weird Al has done it. He's a legend. He's a genius. Apparently, a super, super nice guy too. And he changes the lyrics to songs to make them funny, which, when anyone else does it, is the lamest shit in the world. But when Weird Al does it, it's good. How does he do it? Was he just the first to get there?
He was the first to get there, and he looks weird, and he's got the accordions involved. That's interesting.
Yeah. I went to see Weird Al live once.
What?
Yeah, I saw Weird Al live at the Kentish Town, what's it called?
Forum?
Something. Forum, yeah, I think that's it. It was great. It was amazing. He came on in a Segway for one song. I think, was it White and Nerdy? He came on a Segway. It was amazing. It was brilliant.
Life-affirming. He also never swears or does filthy parodies, so he's completely locked into the Jesus-y market in the States.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's never done a song market where it's just like Total Eclipse of the Fart or anything. It's just, you know, it's all good, clean fun.
I mean, eat it. Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it. If it gets cold, reheat it. I mean, you wouldn't think, how do I make this funny? I'll make it about food. You'd go grosser than that, wouldn't you? You make it about, I mean, Michael Jackson, you could go very gross. But he made it about eating.
He unlocked, if you can unlock good, clean fun and sell it to the American, we don't like cuss words crowd, you're going to be a fucking billionaire.
Imagine him pitching that now, the Eat It parody of Beat It by Michael Jackson. If he was like, okay, so I've come up with a parody of a Michael Jackson song. And you're like, oh yeah. He's like, I'm going to change all the lyrics. I'm going to change the lyrics on Michael Jackson song to make it about something else. And you're like, okay, I see where this is going. And he's like, it's going to be about overeating. What?
Yeah, just silence in the boardroom.
You know who Michael Jackson is, right? Oh, yeah. So dancer, singer guy.
I presume you mean overeating children? No, just hamburgers.
No, just regular food, just like hamburgers and cake.
Just the only sound is rain hitting the glass, that kind of thing. That's and people sort of shuffling papers for the next meeting. Well, thanks for coming in, Mr. Al.
It's Mr. Yankovic, actually, but thank you.
Please call me Weird Al. Mr. Al is my father. I'm going to go listen to that now, actually, Phil.
Eat It?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You can't beat it. It's really good.
Yeah, I might go listen to that. Good. What are you going to do now?
I'm going to do a charity gig, actually. So maybe everyone has misjudged me. Maybe I'm actually all right. Yeah?
Where is it?
At the Leicester Square. At the Comedy Store, I think. For our good friend and fellow comedian, Ivor Graham.
Lovely. Sent him my best, please.
The MS Society.
Yes. Lovely. Send him my love. And our listeners, we will speak to you next week.
Bye, everybody. Enjoy. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.